It is easier to preach 10 sermons than to live one of them. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Capel, California, with instant illumination. It is easier to preach 10 sermons than to live one of them. We all know how easy it is to give advice, to tell other people how to live their lives. We all know how easy it is to make recommendations on what should have been done, you know, how things should have been carried out and more successfully. But for us to follow our advice is another cup of tea. Speaking of cups of tea, Ellen likes to go to a restaurant with her bag of tea that particularly she likes and doesn't have to worry about asking for it. She says, "Give me a cup of hot water, please." And they give her a cup of hot water and she puts her tea in there. And so she always gets the kind of tea that she wants. Now, Ellen doesn't preach a sermon on how to get the best tea from the restaurant that you go to. She just practices it and carries it out. She has it in her purse. Of course, what all she's got in her purse would be enough to set up an office, you know. But that's what purses are for, I guess. It's easier to preach a sermon than to live one. And so Ellen is showing by her attitude, by her technique, by herself, that she lives her sermons. She lives what she preaches. She lives what she teaches. And Ellen teaches the Boy Scout model, always be prepared. And so she's always prepared with her cup of tea. Well, the other night we were at a casino for the birthday of one of our friends who was 88 years old. And at the casino, she was very much concerned because they had barbecue ribs. And barbecue ribs are finger food. And messy, messy, messy finger food. And they only had one or two little napkins for each place with a nice big order of barbecue ribs. And so Ellen goes to the waiter and says, "We would like more napkins." Of course, so he brings 10 napkins to each one of us who are having barbecue ribs. It's just about enough. But you see, you don't always have to carry everything with you. Now, if she were really prepared, she would have had, you know, 100 napkins in her purse.
That's
it. For the, yeah, that would be Ingeborg. She'd be ready for that. Did you have napkins in your purse, Ingeborg?
Oh, some, yes. One I had.
You had one. Oh, that's great. I was thinking of bringing my napkin along that I buttoned to my shirt so that, you know, it doesn't fall down while you're eating. And I didn't. But you see, be prepared. We're always teaching people to be prepared. We're always preaching about, you know, being ready for whatever comes along, whatever things are necessary. I have always preached that a car should have a toolkit with it. A screwdriver, a pliers, a hammer, a wire or two. In the old days, it was baling wire. Baling wire was fence wire, you know, that you tie ups to keep the fences up, and this also you tie to keep the mufflers on and things like that from your Model A. But that's a few years ago. Today, everything is so sophisticated, it is just amazing. But nonetheless, you still need to have a little help once in a while. And I was thinking to myself the other day, it is so strange that they don't have a jack in these expeditions. No place there is a jack and a wrench to move the jack up and down and take the lug nuts off. And then I was missing a key for unlocking the hitch lock. We have the special hitch lock that slips into the back and there's a big bolt going through it to keep it in place to haul trailers with. And it's locked on there. And each of the expeditions have their key in it, except this one didn't have it any place I could find it. And so I was looking at all the compartments that I had never been in before. And I went into the back compartment of the expedition, and there was the the jack to go underneath the car to raise it up to take off wheels, and the lug nut wrench, all sort of serendipitously hidden behind the panel so that you wouldn't realize that there was even anything there. It had sort of a vent in the front of it, making you think that it was venting something, you know. But there was the jack. And then, another thing you have to be aware of, if the car ever bumps something, it has an automatic shut-off for the carburation system, for the ignition carburation system. And you have to reach underneath the car and pull out a long rod with a thing on the end, and then you stick that thing in a certain little gadget underneath the car there, and you click it, and that turns the ignition back on. It turns the fuel pump back on. That's for your car too, the Windstar. And we didn't know about that. That's why it wouldn't start. But when the garage man came, or a neighbor came who knew about it, he said, "Oh, you do this." And so then it started up and drove right off, you know. But up until that time, we thought, that got messed up too. But you see, I teach everyone that if you're going to drive a car, you should have bought the car yourself. You should have gone into the dealer and let him explain everything to you once, twice, three times. So you know where the jack is, you know where that rod is to put your carburation and ignition system back in order again once you have a bump. Because, you know, your car could roll down the hill and bump into a tree and not hurt anything, but bump, you know, bump. And when it does that, it shuts off the ignition system, it shuts off the fuel system, and you can't do a thing. And you have to call AAA, you know. And meanwhile, you wouldn't do that if you just knew that that wrench bar was underneath the car that you stick in there and where to put it and do it. Now, when we bought these cars, they explained all these things to us. But when would we ever need something like that? When had we ever bumped anybody that we need to have that thing done? Well, it happens, and it need to be done. But you see, we preach about this. We preach, be prepared. We preach, know what you're doing. And like I tell Ingeborg, when you drive your golf cart, have fun. When you're done, shut off the key and take it out of the ignition and drop it in the pocket right there. Well, why? Then you got to pick it up from the pocket and put it in again. No, it makes sure that you turn it off. It makes sure that you don't leave the lights turned on and run the battery down. It makes sure that you're not tearing the battery down by one thing or another. You know, there's enough pull in the battery driving the vehicle itself. But if you left that on overnight, you could very well drain your battery and have no ability to start it in the morning. So I have these little rules. And then today, as I got out of Ingeborg's golf cart, I left the key in the ignition, and I left it sitting in the on position because she was going to get in and drive it away, and I should not have done that. Mm-hmm. I should have shut it off, put the key in the little pocket, and let her go through the normal routine of starting it up and doing it properly. But you see, we don't do that. Now, why don't we do that? Why don't we practice what we preach? Why don't we practice? No, you say, well, Herb, that's only you. I practice what I preach. Herb, that's only you doing things like that you say one thing and then you do another. And, okay, I'll take credit for that. It's only me. But nonetheless, when I practice what I preach, everybody is happy. When I don't practice what I preach, everybody says, well, how come you don't have to do it and you told us we have to do it, you know? Even when you are the teacher, you have to do it right. When you are teaching a class in driving and you're preaching to your students and you're saying, every time you come to a full stop with a car and you're parked at the curb, immediately turn off your engine. Immediately put the car in park gear. Immediately do this, that, and the other thing. And then the instructor gets out, and because the student is going to drive, he leaves the key in the ignition, he leaves the ignition turned on, perhaps. He puts it in park, hopefully. But then the kid gets in, and the kid doesn't know what to do. Because he's told he's supposed to go step, step, step. Well, the first couple of steps the instructor had left done, and so the kid couldn't do it. And you build up bad habits. Right then and there is when that kid is building up his habits of driving, or that adult. Because they teach adults as well as children, young people, how to drive. So we don't know just how much we should really do these things. Went down my throat the wrong way, I guess. We don't know just how much of these things we should really do. But we should practice what we preach. If we think it's important enough to preach, we should think it's important enough to practice. And you can see by just the few little illustrations that I gave how by not doing it can throw a lot of people off. The students who expect that when they get in the car, it's going to be from the beginning. They're going to start from the very beginning. What's the first thing the student does when he gets in the car? Sylvia?
Put the mirror.
Yeah, adjusts the mirror.
The first thing the student does when they get in the car is adjust the mirror. But maybe there's another thing they do first.
The seat belt.
They adjust the seat.
Oh, yeah.
No, they have to adjust the seat. And then they adjust the mirror. Because if you adjust the mirror and then adjust the seat, then you got to adjust the mirror again, right? So you really have to adjust the seat first. And then you adjust the mirror. Mm-hmm. And once you got that done, then you lock yourself in place with the seatbelt. You don't put the seatbelt on when you're trying to reach for the mirror and you're trying to do this and you're trying to do that. You put the seatbelt on after that. And then after you got the seatbelt on, then what do?
Put the key in the ignition,
and then what?
Turn it.
Start the car. Hmm. When the car is running, then what do?
You put the blinker out.
No.
You look in the mirror.
No. When the car is running, you put your foot on the brake, and then you release the emergency brake. You take the car out of park and put it in reverse, or whatever you're going to do. Then you look around to see if it's all clear. And if it's all clear, then you drive out. You don't look around first to see if it's clear, and then take it out of gear, and then do this, and then, because it could be busy by the time you're done, ready to move out. You don't look until you're ready to move. And then you let your foot off the brake, and give it a little bit of ignition, a little bit of gas, to back up or do whatever you're going to do. And then once you're out of your parking space, then what do? Then you put your blinker on because you're going to turn into the line of traffic. You're already out of your parking space, but you're in the line of traffic. Now, these things may be done simultaneously many times, and then you move into the traffic rapidly. You don't make the traffic slow down for you as you're catching up. You ping! It's like our friend Dorothea with a little red Jeep. She comes to a stop sign. She looks both ways very clearly, decisively, perfectly. No traffic. Ping! She's out. And she's where she should be. And she doesn't delay anybody. You can be sure of that. She said to me the other day as I was complimenting her driving, even though she wasn't driving, she says, "How do you know my driving? I've never driven with you in the car." And I said, "Well, you've told me all about it." And I said, "And I believe you." She says, "Oh, good." But usually when she's with us, I do the driving, or one of us does the driving. And even then, she would rather stay at home and entertain us in her home. But she is a lovely lady. You see, we should practice what we preach. Now, do we find good wherever we go? Then we should find good at home, too. Do we find lovely people wherever we go? When we go to the store, when we go to the park, when we go anywhere, do we find lovely? Well, we should find lovely people at home too. See? That's what it's all about. You got to find every single person in your life, every single person in your home, and in your world, lovely too. And if there are some people who are not making it very pleasant in your home, then what you do is you see them enjoying themselves, and you see them as very pleasant people, or you may see them off on a journey, and they're not in your home, which is okay too. Whatever the person wants. I'd like to get out of here. I'd like to go here. I'd like to go there. Hey, when are you leaving? That sounds like it'd be a lot of fun, you know. When are you going to go? I haven't decided. Well, hey, right now would be a good time to get going on your trip. Well, Babadoo, you know, hey, I hadn't thought of that. Well, hey, it's your idea. You got enough car fare? I'll help you. And you see, practicing what you preach is living in that state of loving consciousness. We don't want to push people out of our world, but we do want to bring people into our world who are harmonious with what we believe. Now, if a person comes in your world and is disrespectful of you, are you disrespectful back to them? Well, Ellen's shaking her head here so fiercely that I wonder, maybe you are.
Okay, then I am.
No. We don't protest too much.
Well, that was just a question. You made a question and I gave you an answer.
Yes, you sure did. And that's good. What I'm saying to you is, when we create people in our world, we create them beautiful. We create them wonderful. And then, whether we are living what we're preaching is whether the people are lovely and beautiful people. If the people are not lovely and beautiful people, then we're not really preaching the sermon we say we're preaching. We are preaching the sermon of people who are disruptive, and discourteous and disgusting in our world. And we want to create delightful, what a bunch of other good D words, delightful, glorious, the lovely people in our world. Because that's the kind that only matter. That's the kind that are a reflection of who we are. That's what it's all about, you know that? That's what it's all about. We practice what we preach. You'd think that I was going to say something about religion and ministry and stuff like that. Well, I don't know. If your ministry is a ministry of unconditional love, you might never mention the name of Jesus or God once. And yet you're living the Jesus and God principles 100%. And really, that's all that matters, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's all that matters. Well, now you just have a lovely day. And practice what you preach, and know that I'm checking up on you all the
time. Thank
you. I love you. I love you.
I love you.